Good morning. It is Thursday, and that means it is time for Perspectives on WFSU-FM. I'm Tom Flanagan. Hope you've enjoyed the rain in the past 24 hours. I know the farmers have, and that's going to be the basis of one of the major things we're going to be talking about here this morning. In the meantime, if you'd like to be part of the conversation, it's 414-1234, the local number, 800-926-8809, long distance, perspectives at WFSU.org, the email, and tweet us at WFSU Perspective. A lot of experts for years and years have been predicting the demise of the traditional family farm. A lot of movies were made about that, too, where the big corporations moved in and they scarfed up Ma and Pa's property, and they were thrown out on their ear. And, it was a very sad thing. But now we have the farm-to-table movement. Possibly you have heard about that. There are also buy local initiatives. You got the Fresh from Florida program that the state is doing through the Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services. And it just seems like more folks than ever are growing fresh produce, not only for their own use, but also for commercial purposes, for sale. So on this morning's Perspectives, we're going to investigate the phenomena with a really, really great expert panel. And let's go around and introduce you to these folks here. We have Molly Jamison, Sustainable Agriculture and Community Food Systems Extension Agent at the University of Florida, IFAS, Leon County Extension Office over there on Paul Russell. How you doing?
I'm very good.
Good
to be here.
Thank you for coming in. And if you bop down to Frenchtown, you get around Dunn Street or something, you see a great plot of land and young people are in there and they're digging in the dirt and they are harvesting and they are planting and doing all kinds of things. And you'll probably run into this guy, Sundiata Amael of I Grow Whatever You Like, which is based in Frenchtown. It's a youth empowerment and urban agriculture program and largely run by the I Grow young folks themselves. And Sundiata, thanks for coming in.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having us. And yeah, this is exciting. Excited to talk about all the great things going on here in Tallahassee.
Yeah, because before that was just an empty lot. And I remember it was, man, you had certainly more police than green stuff down there on a lot of occasions. And
yes.
Now it is just a hub of the community in a really busy place.
It really is. And the garden has been able to kind of bridge a lot of the community together when we're talking about police as well as the residents. So that green space has done a phenomenal job of just kind of cultivating, you know, everybody in that community.
You just have to look out for the neighbor there, that wild guy with the beak, the bees right next door,
that red flag guy. You know, the bees help us out, so we're okay with Rick.
Need pollination, that's for sure. And nobody knows that better than Herman Holly of Turkey Hill Farm. He's also with us. If you haven't seen Turkey Hill Farm, it's in eastern Leon County. They grow vegetables and fruits for market and select local restaurants, too. And a very proud member of the Red Hill Small Farm Alliance. Herman, good to see you, sir.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Hey, talk about the Alliance and that group, because it's not just Turkey Hills Farm. You have, around 50 participating farmers in this now.
Yes. My wife and Katie Harris of Full Earth Farm and Mary Russ, who is the produce manager at Whole Foods now, and a couple of other women, created an organization that the Red Hill Small Farm Alliance. And then the first project of the Red Hills Small Farm Alliance has been the Red Hills online market, rhomarket.com, which has been operating for 6 years. And as you said, has about 50 farms within 100 miles of Tallahassee that sell through that market. It's very exciting for farmers and consumers both.
Obviously, you can make a living doing this stuff, right?
Well, we're paying the bills. We're not getting rich. Actually, at Turkey Hill, our most precious profit has been training, which is the next project of the Red Hill Small Farm Alliance. Now that the online market is going very well. Molly Jamison, our extension agent, is an alumni of Turkey Hill Farm. She came to us when she almost had her bachelor's from U of F, and wanted practical experience. And so we said, sure, you can volunteer for the summer. And she did. And then she went back to U of F and got her bachelor's and worked for us for a couple of years.
Three years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then she went to NC State, Wolfpack, right? and got her master's degree in soil science.
All because of Herman got me into the soil, into the compost.
And then here she is back in Leon County as our extension agent, which is and that's just one of the success stories. Well, Katie Harris, Full Earth Farm.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Worked with us for not quite a year. She's a really quick learner.
I take a while.
and then she has started her farm on her family's land over in Quincy. And I could go on and on, but we're paying the bills, and we're really excited about the educational aspects of agriculture that so many young people, not just here but all over the country, are interested in producing fresh, local, wholesome food for their communities.
Well, that's why, Sundiata, I got to ask you, what is up with this? Because when I was growing up, the escape from farm country was what motivated so many young mm-hmm. people to get into a more exciting urban environment and make your living there. Down on the farm, oh, man, it was boring. It was horrible. It was a terrible way to live in the thinking of a lot of young people.
Yeah.
What's with this coming back, literally coming back to the earth again?
Right. Well, you know, I've heard that sentiment from a lot of people in the community as well as throughout the country where they were rushing to get off of the farm. They, you know, they were trying to go to university, get a degree, end up in an office somewhere and not have to deal with their foreparents had been dealing with. But I think this widespread environmental awareness that's taking place now is really bringing people back to the earth and how to, you know, get folks back on the land, cultivate the land, get it prepared and ready for generations to come. And the foods, you know, we kind of, you know, off air, we were talking about how foods are created, subsidized, and now the chemicals and the things that go into what we get on store shelves have really pushed and created a catalyst for people to get back to what it means to eat wholesome food. And so now we have young people who are figuring these things out, you know, from high school, middle school, high school, up into the collegiate levels, where, you know, they're really looking, paying attention to what's going on globally, with access to global information and the internet. They see, you know, the disparities that exist across the planet, and they want to do something about it. And urban ag and moving into farming is one of those answers to sort of curtailing or leveling off the injustices that exist across the planet. So, you know, young people are coming back to it, coming back to the farm, but they don't necessarily want to do it on that large scale that you know our grandparents moved away from. They want to do it in a much more dense environment while still being around family and friends, and the urban farm offers them that opportunity.
Before we even started this program, I was talking to our news department colleague, Regan McCarthy, our assignment editor, and she was telling me and showing me pictures of the garden that she has going in the back of her rental property. Her landlord is really supportive of this and said, hey, go right ahead. So she has a spread probably close to that 4 by 8 foot that seems to be the minimal size to really have something that's producing.
Standard, yeah.
Yeah, and she has some string beans that are like almost 2 feet long. I'm going, what is up with it? But she's out there composting and digging and using natural fertilizers and pest control and all that kind of thing. And, yeah. And Molly Jameson, you're just seeing this explode all over the place right now.
Oh, yes, definitely. Yeah, being an extension agent, we've gotten lots and lots of calls from people getting community gardens together and a lot of schools that all want to have school gardens. And then we have a lot of interest in getting back to composting and what to do with your food waste instead of putting it in your trash, which goes to the landfill, which creates methane. You can use that as a, if you get it decomposed, you can use that in your garden and just learning the whole nutrient cycle and having that going on in tons of community gardens and school gardens all around Tallahassee.
So if you did not grow up on a farm or hang out with people who were really into this while you were younger, you need a good community resource. And that's where the Extension Office comes in. You go into any rural community and you guys are like the hub of the world. And it's becoming that way here in a more urban environment, too.
Right. Yeah, because that's kind of my background. I wasn't my family weren't big gardeners, so I had to come to it through, you know, my community and just learning from friends about gardening. And then, yeah, at Extension, we offer a lot of different workshops on composting where you can actually get out there and we give you the pitchfork and you got to shovel it. And yeah, my coworker Mark Tanzik, he's a horticulture agent, and he gets from restaurants, and he actually composts at home, and we do workshops, kind of a bigger scale and backyard composting. So that's the kind of thing you can get into if you come out and get your hands dirty.
For a number of years, I think Leon County had that. They would bring in trucks, and they for like $30 you could get a composter and all. That kind of fell off, but I'm hoping that they can get that going again one year.
Yeah. We're offering some vermicompost workshops coming up, so you can even be in an apartment complex and still do composting, where the worms do all the work. And so, yeah, you can come out and learn how to get that going, and then we'll even give you a worm bin to take home with you, so you can have a mini scale composting operation.
Yes, but my apartment doesn't let me keep pets. You don't understand.
They'll never know. Just put them in your closet.
If you have any questions about do-it-yourself farming, either on a small or maybe a larger scale, this is something that you've been thinking of. We have a great panel of experts here on this morning's Perspectives as we talk about such things as urban farming and agricultural community participation. We hope to hear from someone who's involved in one of those programs in just a little bit, as well as how to start your own herb and or vegetable and fruit producing stuff right there in your own garden. 414-1234 is the number for Perspectives. If it's long distance, 800-926-8809. Hey, we are back on Perspectives, talking with Sundiata Amael of I Grow Whatever You Like, Herman Holly of Turkey Hill Farm in eastern Leon County, Molly Jameson with the Leon County Extension Office, and of course your participation too. And you could always find Perspectives online at WFSU.org. Just go onto our newly redesigned website. We want to hear what you think of it. We're trying to make it a little bit more user-friendly and more interactive and more features without being overly complex. Click on radio, pull down the programs menu, you'll find Perspectives, and we try to have the most recent show up within a couple 3 hours, certainly by the close of business day on the very day that it airs. If I can ask you, Herman Holly, as far as the now proliferation of local farms and locally owned and operated farms are concerned, that must mean that there is a market for the product. As you said, no one's really getting super duper rich off of this, but you got to be able to sell what you produce, or what's the point, right?
Yeah, there's a market. There's more demand than supply, which is kind of a good place to be. We don't have any trouble. Well, I say we don't have any trouble because my wife's the marketer. I don't have any trouble. We go to the market at Market Square on Timberlane Road on Saturday morning, and we sell through the online market, and we sell to restaurants. And with those three ways to market, we are able to sell everything that we grow. And the restaurants want more. If you've got a garden, you need to join the Red Hill Small Farm Alliance, and you can sell it without having to go to the market. You just you list on Sunday, you go to your computer, and I could sell 10 pounds of carrots and 1 pound bunches. You put it on the computer, and offer that. And then on Wednesday morning, you get an email that tells you that 8 bunches of carrots sold. So Thursday midday, you deliver those.
And I got to say, from a consumer's perspective, I can be really lazy on the weekends. And so I just roll out of, I don't even have to get out of bed on Sunday mornings. And there's an app for the Red Hills Online Market. And I use my cell phone and I buy from, up to 50 different farmers all in one spot. And then I go back to sleep. So and I just pick it up on Thursday.
Boy, it sure beats getting up and getting dressed and hopping in the car and trucking on down to the market and seeing, oh, man, those strawberries didn't come in yet.
It's good to go to the farmer's market, too. But I got to say, it's pretty convenient to be able to just shop on my phone for local produce.
Well, Sundiata, you guys have a market, too, for what you produce through iGrow, right? There's an outlet for the produce that you guys have?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, like Herman mentioned, we also sell through Red Hills. We also sell at the farmer's market on Martin Luther King and Georgia, mm-hmm. in Frenchtown. This is the Frenchtown Heritage Farmer's Market. So they operate twice a week now, Saturday from 10 to 1 and Tuesday afternoons from 3 to 7, I believe. So that new day, that Tuesday that was just recently added, gives the local farmers and the local artisans an opportunity to vend more than just that Saturday. So yes, and we also sell to restaurants as well, but we're much smaller than some of our our area neighbors. But we sometimes we even have a hard time moving all of our food because we are really operating 2 days out of the week. Doing a lot of the work with young folks who are kind of novices at everything. So we're at that sort of cusp of what it takes to be a real farm and how to really make money from the things that we grow. Because, a lot of our produce does end up going back into our compost piles, mm-hmm. Because of that lack of expertise that we have on site. So we've been, making some transitions with the iGrow Farm over the past year and a half to make it more of an entrepreneurial hub so that when young folks do come, we have everything laid out in terms of a programmatic structure. Like, here's what you need to learn, to when you do step off on your own, if that's what you want to do, here's what you need to know to, market your food, make a, set a good price for it, and all the things that go into, growing and selling. So it's a challenge. But I think I wanted to kind of piggyback on what Herman said. The Small Farm Alliance and Red Hills Online is just a great place for a new farmer to set up, because a new farmer wouldn't really have the expertise and all of the knowledge on what it takes to push their food to market and sell. But the online market makes it such a easy, fluid way to grow and then sell your food, because you could be growing in a small, 20 by 20, but you list what you have, somebody's going to purchase some of your food. And it's motivating. It's motivating to see somebody buying the food that you're creating in your backyard. And so, hats off to Red Hills.
Yeah, and you don't necessarily need that advanced degree from the Jim Moran Institute on, how to go about, right. Selling your stuff. There is another phenomena that is operational right now, and I got to give a shout out to our old pal Rick Oppenheim of RB Oppenheim Associates, who turned me on to this. It is Tallahassee's first planned agricultural community, and is being put together about 15 miles east of the Capitol off Apalachee Parkway. It's about 8 miles past Capitol Circle. And you may have heard of planned agricultural communities. I think there's a very successful one up in Atlanta. There's a few more in California. And one of the guys who's connected with this one, which is called Pine Dove Farm, is James Jarrett. And he joins us on the line. Hey, James, thanks for your patience and for getting back with me this morning. How's it going?
Going good. I appreciate the opportunity to talk about our development out on Williams Road and explain to people what we're doing. We are just getting started, and I'm open to any questions or to talk about the community and where we are and a little bit about it.
Yeah, exactly. How does it work? Give us a thumbnail sketch of that.
Probably 40 years ago, there was a farm called Pine Dove Farm, the Petrandis family, and it was purchased by some individuals out of New York. I met them and became involved with them as probably helping them the vision they have here in Tallahassee. Of the 200 acres, about 100 of it is in a conservation easement with walking trails, lakes for fishing for the kids. There will be a clubhouse, a boating, kayaking. But the center of the whole development is the farm community. And we're centering around a CSA, community-supported agricultural, and we have hired a farm manager that would be running it, that you can either buy a share, a half share, or participate in working, where we are working with the land planner with Wooden Partners. They designed the area up front where the farm will be, and laying out the orchards, the row crops, the raised beds, that type. We're working with a company called Great Southern Forestry, Leland Taylor, to do the permacultural and how we make everything come about. We should be able to start the farm within the next week to 2 weeks. And we see it as what's happening now in development. Instead of having a golf course, you go back to nature. You are back to where the 134 neighbors out there would participate in the farm. It's a place on Saturday. They get together. They pick up their produce, their vegetables, their fruit, and it's a focal point. And we feel that it's a very viable way to develop now. So of the 200 acres, there would be 135 lots. They would all be a half acre. But it would be centered around the farm, is what our concept is.
Okay, so and like you said, instead of living on the right next to the 13th hole, you kind of live right next to the soybeans, right?
Well, it wouldn't be soybeans. it would be whatever in season, and that's who the farm manager, that's their job. Okay, we had three gardens when I grew up. That's the way we lived, okay? And we had a large family. But during the season, there would be tomatoes, carrots, onions, broccoli, okra, and based on your share on the CSA, it might be every 2 weeks, and it might be once a month that you would come down to the farm and pick up the vegetables that are grown, okay? And then the neighbors could get together. There would be a community barn. There would be trellises. There would be cut flowers that were grown that you could have. But we feel it's a way that people can communicate and participate growing and feel good about what they eat. We're not using any pesticides, herbicides. And the goal would be down the road to be where it is organic, and that is a process that you just don't right off the bat do, okay? It does take some time, but the goal would be that we would be an organic farm.
Wow, this is fascinating. Pine Dove Farm, then, off of Williams Road. And how can folks find out more about the development?
There's a full-blown website. They can go to pinedovefarm.com. And it explains it. It goes into detail. It shows where the farm is, what's being grown. The first, as you come in, there's going to be about 2 acres of farm. As we go back, there'll be another area where we have pecan trees. There'll be some row crops. There will be where I think we're going to have an area where we have chickens for the eggs in the second farm area. So...
Fascinating concept. James Jarrod with Pine Dove Farm, and you can visit the website to find out some more. Thanks so much, James. Really appreciate it. And if you could pass along all the best to Mike Ferry, too, who's your partner in that thing, okay?
Thank you.
Hey, thank you. Take care. Well, folks, what do you think? I wanted to throw that out there, the new type of development, a combination of agricultural and residential concept that's a borning here in our community.
Oh, that sounds fascinating.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It sounds like there's, that they are modeling it after some of the other concepts that exist, like you mentioned, in Atlanta and other places. So if they're, following, to the T what some of these other communities have done to make them successful, then, it sounds like it's going to be a great, great project. I'm already wondering, who's the farm manager and, what is it going to look like and how they're going to have it laid out and are they going to be composting? And, all these things start running through our minds, but it'll be great to see that type of a community unfold.
Yeah, this I think 25 years ago, this would have been incomprehensible, mm-hmm. To have people living around an agricultural-based development. That just seems almost counterintuitive. Everyone, again, wanted the golf course or, a big community swimming pool or something. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But
this has been successfully done in several other places that I've read about. It's really exciting that it's coming to Tallahassee.
Yeah.
Good news.
Yeah. Michelle joins us here on line three. Let's go with her call. Thanks for hanging on, Michelle. Welcome to Perspectives.
Hi. Thank you for having me. I was trying to figure out what the phone number was to call you guys. But my name's Michelle Madison, and I run a nonprofit called Farming the Future. And I actually build aquaponic farms and terrestrial farms in schools and facilities throughout Leon County and use that as a tool to teach kids in this area STEM education and career education and agriculture and provide them opportunities that they otherwise wouldn't have known about.
Oh, wow. So you work through the school district, or how does that happen, Michelle?
Well, I'm a registered NPO, and so essentially what I do is I go out of my way to try to source materials from around the community or work with businesses that can help provide plumbing and wood and the things needed to build these systems. And most of the time, either I will reach out to a school or a school or facility will reach out to me, saying that they want to incorporate agriculture into their education. And it not only do these kids get to learn about agriculture, but they wish the aquaponic system, which means that you can raise fish, harvest fish, and raise vegetables, they get to learn the science behind it, like microbiology and chemistry and the mathematics of how many fish can we keep in X amount of gallons for production. And they get really excited about it, and they get to put on lab coats to run water quality tests, and it makes them see that, this isn't just farming. We're not just farming. There's science behind it and engineering, and it's so much more exciting than what, our parents were, trying to get away from.
Oh, that is terrific. Do you have a website that folks can go to find out some more, Michelle?
I do. We actually have a really wonderful Facebook. If you just go on Facebook and look up Farming the Future, you can see all of the pictures, and one of the places that we've had a huge success is at the juvenile detention center in Leon County. I'm actually on my way there right now and to finish the new design, because I've been working at that facility for about 6 months now, and the state headquarters, it's been such a success. And the kids love it so much. We're getting a new greenhouse that's bigger than the one we have now. And we're expanding the program and building a brand new aquaponic system and an even bigger terrestrial farm, because the kids take to it and get so excited about getting to go out there and see all of it. And the food that we grow on these campuses and in these facilities not only go to the cafeterias for the kids to be able to eat, like, food grown right outside the cafeteria door, but they also get to donate it to women's shelters and homeless shelters and a second harvest. And so they're even getting to pay back society and get volunteer hours.
Oh, terrific. Gosh, I was not aware of the program, Michelle. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. And that's Farming the Future. You can check that out on Facebook. Thanks for the call, Michelle.
Thank you so much for talking about this. It really is important that this is happening now and people are becoming aware about where their food is coming from. So thank you.
All right. And for whatever reason, it always tastes better when you harvest your own and just bring it in fresh and it goes right onto the table. I don't know why that is. But you talked about that too, Herman Holly, the fact that you have a very limited window in which to produce and to get this produce onto tables, whether it's a commercial application or in the kitchen.
Yeah, well, fresh is better, and that's one of the marketing things that we have in our favor is part of what put small farms out of business in our area was that you could get everything all year long from California when fuel was cheap, and now fuel is not cheap, but there's no competition for fresh local. But fresh local, I mean, you know, so right. So now the food from California costs more, but the food from here tastes better.
Tastes better, absolutely. 414-1234, the number for Perspectives. We're talking community farming and gardening. Give us a call. All right, we are back on Perspectives. And again, thanks, Michelle, for mentioning that we should tell you the phone number more often. 414-1234 is the local number. So difficult to remember. 800-926-8809 of long distance and Perspectives at WFSU.org. Let's get to Jack here. He's hanging on line two. Hey, Jack.
Yes, good morning. Two things. I just wanted to thank the Department of Agriculture and their wonderful organic farmer for having the display on Calhoun Street at the Holland Building. It's available all times for visiting, even some cooking some kale and other delicious things. So I know one of your guests is responsible for that. I also wanted to put in a plug for local beekeeping. My wife is a beekeeper in our backyard, and we have an organic garden. And the Appalachian Beekeepers, you could Google that, is one of the largest membership in the whole state of Florida. So it's kind of like the UN. There are people from every continent who enjoy the hobby and the beauty of beekeeping. So make sure that your listeners are aware that it is it's an open organization, and we learn a lot, and we have a sweet reward, if you know what I mean, Tom.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, Jack. We try to have the Appalachian Beekeepers on Perspectives at least once a year. Otherwise, my old friend Rick Flagg, who is one of the guiding lights of the organization, will come and haunt me. So
yeah, he's our mentor, so we love Rick.
Hey, well, thanks again for the reminder of that, Jack. And remember, we would not have plants at all were it not for pollinators like bees, and they are kind of the proverbial canary in the coal mine when it comes to so much of the environment. When there is something that is amiss out in the great world, the bees kind of let you know because they're going through some stuff. Do we still have a fairly healthy population here with our pollinators, guys? Do you know, Herman?
Oh, yeah. Well, at our farm, there's a beekeeper who's a member of the Appalachian Beekeepers. Michelle Wall is her name, and she keeps a few colonies in her backyard on Branch Street, but she has most of her bees at our farm, and they're there are more challenges with keeping bees than there were when I was young, but she keeps up with it. I mean, you know, we have new imported from Asia pests that they have to deal with that they didn't have when I was a young person. But if you're a vigilant beekeeper and then you can produce a lot of honey.
Mm-hmm. Now, Jack had also mentioned down at the Holland building. Funny he was mentioning that. I took a picture of that garden just this past weekend when I was down there.
Oh, cool.
Because there was no traffic, and I thought, okay, I can get right in the middle of the street and get this nice wide shot of there. That is not the only state or private sector office building in Leon County that has its own dedicated garden. Right? I mean, I've seen that Sundiata and a number of other places where you've even got private companies now that are putting their own gardens out back and the employees kind of kick in and help keep it going.
Yeah. You know, well, the garden at Calhoun Street was started a couple of years ago under the tutelage of Nathan Ballantyne, one of our, you know, shining stars here. He's since moved on to another city, but his heart is here. Yeah, the man in overalls.
And, yeah.
And I kind of, you know, I learned much of what I know from Nathan, and I subsequently took that garden over when he decided to move on. But that garden has been a bright spot for many, many schools and many homeschool groups and other youth organizations that have come to visit it. It's the Fresh for Florida Kids Garden. And it is a bright spot, but you're right. More companies are looking to, you know, just have something growing, whether it's a very small type of operation or something just a little bit larger. But they're interested in bringing that to their employees. They're looking to bring that type of energy, so to speak, to the people that are working there. Because, I mean, the statistics and the data is out about what gardens do for people. And so if you're in that type of space, even if you work in a building and you're in front of a computer all day, to have a garden outside that you can go outside to and spend 5 or 10 minutes in, it rejuvenates you. And yeah, so a lot of companies and organizations are looking to create some sort of green space in their environment.
It sure helps, though, if you've got the expertise and the help to get the thing started. Online is a wonderful resource. Of course, you can learn so much. But the whole idea of the Extension Office, Molly Jameson, was to be that resource, whether it was for backyard gardeners or for commercial farmers. And so you guys are kind of the repository of all knowledge when it comes to that.
Right. And actually, we have had a lot more interest lately in different private companies wanting to have us host lunch and learns. And so we go out and we just talk about the basics, Vegetable Gardening 101, and really easy ways to get started, easy ways to build a raised bed or to have a container garden so that different employees can have that green space and can get, you know, to be harvesting their own produce that they can be eating at their office. So we've been doing a lot of lunch and learns out and about in the community just on the basics of vegetable gardenings for companies.
Some folks, though, might be scared away because they're thinking, my God, it sounds like so much work. That's what you do for a living, Herman. So is it a lot of work?
Well, I heard sometime that if you do what you love, you never have to work another day in your life.
That's right.
But sometimes late in the afternoon, it does seem like a lot of work.
Takes a nap.
But you got to do something, you know. We love it. We all love it. You might find somebody around that would badmouth gardening, but not here.
Yeah, and you can, I mean, just a little small plot of land, it doesn't take too much work to be, you know, you have the sun, that gets you a lot of your energy. If you get good, healthy soil, use compost, that gives your plants the nutrients. And then just with a few little tips that you learn along the way, it's not too hard to grow some vegetables.
And you don't have to use the really high-powered chemicals when it comes to pest control and all that. There are benign ways of doing that.
Well,
right?
Well, the more healthy your soil, the less pests you have. You know, that's a secret that the chemical companies don't want you to know. Our main fertility at Turkey Hill Farm, I mean, we get soil tests regularly and we respond to them, you know, and So we give the soil what it might be missing, but there's not much that we have to do other than make a lot of compost. So we at Turkey Hill make most of our compost from fish and chips. We get wood chips from the people that clear the power lines, and we get the fish waste from Southern Seafood, and we compost that. But you can compost anything that'll rot. You know, it's not a... last week was International Compost Awareness Week.
I didn't know that. I should have celebrated.
And if you look on the Red Hill Small Farm Alliance Facebook page, you'll see there was a video contest. Well, it wasn't exactly a contest, but there was a winner. But the winner was drawn from anybody who composted on whatever scale was invited to post a video. And so you can look at some of those videos there and maybe get some ideas. But if you make compost or get compost and build your soil with compost, then you have fewer pests than you might expect. Healthy plants have far fewer pest problems than you might think.
Okay. Jerry joins us on line one. Hi, Jerry. Welcome to Perspectives.
Thank you very much. First, my compliments to the panel. This is just a wonderful panel and a lot of inspiration there. I'm following up a little bit, though, and I'd like to get the comments from the panel members about what is obviously a real crisis around the country with reference to our bee population. And I wondered if they were knowledgeable of anything that the state or the Extension Service or the county's doing to combat this terrible crisis.
Okay, let's start with you, Molly Jameson, then, since he took your name in vain, sir. Let's go ahead.
Well, you know, we focus a lot on education, so really promoting different pollinator plants in your garden and complementing that with native pollinators so that it supports a lot of our native pollinators that are natural in our environment. So anything that can crawl around a flower could pollinate your crop and produce fruit. So if we protect those native pollinators and grow native pollinator plants to support the native pollinators, then, you know, they can live in symbiosis with one another. And then, of course, protecting our bees, thinking about what you're putting on a plant that could hurt our different bee populations. At Extension, we also have a beekeeping in the Panhandle series that happens about once a year, where you can come and get educated about beekeeping, and so you can start your own bees and help to support the population.
Okay, and Sundiata down there on Dunn Street, of course, with Rick's Hives being right next door, I imagine that helps somewhat.
Tremendously. I mean, yeah, our fruit trees, all of the vegetables are just, you know, booming with life, and yeah, the bee colonies there are just a great addition. And I'd like to address Jerry's question also. I think the solution to ensuring a healthy bee population and so it can continue to thrive is to get to know your farmer and know what type of farming practices that they have on their farm, and support farmers that are, you know, doing it the right way. Support farmers and buy from them. Buy local food that is being produced organically or using organic methods. That, I think, is one of the angles that we can come from to ensure that the bee population will continue to thrive, because you're taking your resources and you're focusing on local food that's grown organically, and that food that's grown other types of ways, using other chemicals and GMOs that are having a profound detrimental impact on the bee population. So I would say get to know who your farmers are and support local food, organically grown local food.
Okay, Herman, your thoughts on that?
Yes, well, I talking with Michelle, who keeps bees at our farm, she says that that hers often outperform other beekeepers that she talks with, and she attributes that to, as Sundiata said, to the way that we farm. We don't use anything that harms the bees, and so I think as Sundiata said, that the most powerful thing that people can do to support the bee population is to eat food that's produced sustainably. Mm-hmm. If you buy organic food, then there's been no no chemicals sprayed on that food that would harm the bees. There's controversy about whether the neonicotinoid pesticides are the culprit in the colony collapse. I don't know. You know, there's controversy about that. But I hear from our beekeeper, I mean, she has to deal with some pests that were inadvertently imported from Asia, but she doesn't have to deal with harsh chemicals with her bees at our farm.
Let me throw out something to you guys. What would happen, and this may not be beyond the pale, if the average consumer in Leon County just increased their use of locally produced fruits and vegetables by, say, 10%? Okay? What would that do as far as the local farmers and growers are concerned?
I'm not sure that we have the supply. The challenge that we have is we need more farmers. That's what the Red Hill Small Farm Alliance online market has grown really fast, you know, from a dozen when we started, a dozen members to now almost 50. Mm-hmm. But there's still not enough locally produced food for everybody in Leon County to increase their consumption 10%, I don't think. So that's why the Red Hill Small Farm Alliance next project is education. We need more local farmers. And so am I talking to you out there, aspiring local farmer?
Well, and Sundiata, I was talking to Gina Kinchlow with the Big Bend Chamber of Commerce yesterday, mm-hmm. and they are looking for new opportunities for young entrepreneurs. We were talking about Michelle and the Farming the Future folks going into the schools and trying to get more, you know, young people really stoked about this and think, my God, this is a possible career path.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, rather than go to, you know, work for the state or do whatever else, where I could be my own boss. I could grow not only food for my family, but mm-hmm. also on a commercial basis. And you get more of those small farms in the pipeline. And as you were saying, Herman, it's great. You can get your strawberries from across the country or, you know, your tomatoes from Peru or wherever else. But if more of our food can be grown and consumed locally, mm-hmm. how that helps everybody. It's not just the growers and it's not just the consumers. It's a really symbiotic thing.
I'm not an economist, but I've read and then talked to economists about the impact of that sort of thing. You know, if 10% of everybody in Leon County's food dollars went, if the supply was there, went to local, purchasing local food, the impact on the local economy is staggering. It is just amazing what an effect the dollars you spend going to local businesses, whether it's farms or other businesses, what that rising tide lifts the whole community, rather than your dollars going to some international company and it isn't recycled in the community very mm-hmm. much. There's a few employees, but when it's a local business, whether it's a farm or some other business, it really has an impact on our local community.
Yeah, and Sundiata, as you said, the impact on health, because it is produced without the GMOs and the harmful chemicals and that kind of thing, and it is fresh.
Yeah, I mean, and wow, it's Herman just mentioned something that made me think about the dollar that could be used to purchase fresh food. And when we look at the number of people that are on SNAP and EBT benefits and how the educational component is so important, because the majority of the people who utilize SNAP and EBT, and, you know, food stamps, don't have that educational piece to dedicate their dollars towards, those SNAP dollars towards buying fresh produce. Well, at the Frenchtown Heritage Farmers Market, there's that, we have that 2-for-1 incentive. So it's like a double your bucks type initiative. And we're trying to get more people involved and educate them on the fact that, you know, you don't have to go spend your money buying some mess out of the grocery store. You can come to the farmers market and double the amount of food based on, you know, that 2-for-1 initiative that we have. And so the millions of dollars that are, you know, thrown through SNAP in EBT, just to be able to capture a small percentage of that into the local farm community, into the local economy, could change our situation overnight in terms of the money that's recycled through the community. And I also want to mention, you also mentioned, Tom, about the career pipeline. That's something that the iGrow and the Tallahassee Food Network, which is our parent company, have been really discussing with universities locally as well as outside universities about how do we get these young people to come in at school age, train them all the way through high school, and then be able to offer them some type of scholarship on a university level to go into an agricultural field. So this is just right on time. The educational piece, it's here, and we need to make it happen.
You just brought it all together. I really appreciate it. Cindiata, I'm an L of I Grow Whatever You Like, Herman Holly of Turkey Hill Farm, and Molly Jameson of the Extension Office. Thank you guys for coming on Perspectives today.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Let's go out and have lunch. What do you say?
Yeah.
Perspectives produced by WFSU-FM in Tallahassee. Evan Rossi and Lytle Rawls pushing the buttons today. I'm Tom Flanagan. Next week, we'll discover that young women are making some serious inroads into traditionally male-dominated fields. Coming up next week, right here on Perspectives.
Audio copies of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcast. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.